Good morning. I really want to thank you, Glenn, for the opening words that you brought to our gathering today, because they're very inclusive and I would say appropriate, because how many of us have a story of our own lives and some balance of pain and pleasure in terms of times we spent with our fathers? My father had a very bad temper. He doesn't anymore, I would say. Three heart surgeries kind of took care of that. The first time, he had quintuple bypass. So I think that really put things in a different perspective for him right away. I look back on the way he has changed, I think, because of that kind of encounter with death he's faced. I remember growing up and on into adulthood really being afraid of him. Because if a situation got tense, I wasn't sure what would happen. I don't remember specific behavior from him that frightened me. I just remember the fear. And apparently it's still with me a little bit. But it has been comforting to see him differently now. He's very patient, very forgiving. He is still emotionally distant, but so many of those hard edges have softened, and I'm really grateful for that. He loves baseball and taught me love of the game. It's kind of a two-sided coin, because he also emphasized the perfection of professional players, not directly but indirectly. About 5 years ago, I asked him why he never watched college football or college basketball, and he said, because the standard of excellence is so high in the big leagues. I was thinking, that kind of threw me a little bit. How does anyone meet those standards if you play Little League? And yet, at the same time, he had some concerns over the NBA Finals this last couple of weeks, because the players are so physical, and he was noticing how that's not part of the game. It's become a part of the game, but it isn't intrinsically part of the game. I had a really hard time preparing this. I have lots of scribbled notes, and I haven't referred to any of them. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to touch on some of these inner places here. And may all of us make this journey together as it occurs for any of us.
Some of you know I'm a poet, or was, before I retired and took up watercolor painting instead. But I was looking back through my poetry of years past and took out four poems about my father. And I had a hard time deciding which one to read. Then I realized I can have about 5 minutes, right?
Much as you want.
I'm going to read them all. All four, but they're not long. The first one is called Obad, A-U-B-A-D-E. Means dawn, a dawn meditation. Father faced the kitchen window in such fine morning light. No doubt my rare rising before dawn draws him to my mind. I would walk in and look out the window past his arm, raised to hold steady the half-filled cup of hot coffee, avid to see what he gazed at with such rapt attention. Something perched in that tree, perhaps a wren or a pippin, or some furtive thing along the fence or far up the road, something that slipped from sight before I even got a glance. Now, as I stare past my neighbor's roof to the sky, I know he saw even less in his looking than my light searching, saw even more, first love or those bone-fed trenches in France, recalled a lost chance with remorse or a settled regret, or wondered the windings, each turn that led to the window. Second poem doesn't have a title. Haven't got around to giving one, I guess. I have come to understand my father's final years, his 70s and 80s, least unhappy in his garden. Fingers crumbling compost, the earth his and nature's doing. I interred his ashes there. He spent more time staring down than up, never heavenward nor at mere stars, and rarely at the passing world, car, truck, or plane, not even heard, above the beetle and the bird. And this poem is called Thanatos. I liked pretentious titles many, many years ago. It means it's a poem about death. And it has a reference in it to a poem by Robert Lowell, where Robert Lowell talks about burying his parents in the family place in a place called Dunbarton. It is not particularly funny to reach the age of Jack Benny without a ghost of where to bury either your mother or father. We have nothing so sure, so solid as Dunbarton to set sail for. I will be ignorant as a child when some functionary phones for instructions. Mother, the wanderer, of course, should be cremated as per her last religion, a bit on Mount Shasta, a part in Santa Fe, the rest along the Pacific. No, not on the water. Let the ashes of those fingers seize finally the smooth stones. But father, leathered to that shape, head like a skull, fingers already burned black, his stone form should be couched in the cliffside at Shine, sealed back to his loved earth, or perhaps folded in a blanket, bolt upright, like an old Indian, muttering still. He will be not so silent in death as he has been living. That silence that mocks my scribbling punctuates the indecency of the sun's failure either to slay or to honor. And the third poem I read Obad, right? I'm getting mixed up here. Have I read two?
Three.
Oh, I read three. I don't remember reading the third one, but there you are. All right. The last poem I don't have to read because it's one of my few poems I remember. My father, when I was a child in New Jersey, worked in New York City, but he came home to Mountain Lakes on the weekends, and he spent most of his time in the garden raising his prized gladiolas. And my strong image of my childhood is seeing my father crouched in the garden planting his gladiolas, which he had to plant very carefully in little trenches with peat moss and get each one exactly level. You know, gladioluses will come up only at a right angle to the plane of the bulb. So that's one of my images of childhood. I was allowed in the front yard to mow the lawn, but not really in the backyard. And so this poem is really about that memory of my father and his gladiolus. It's called Generations. It refers not just to my father, but to my being a father. Once recently, crouched in the garden, scanning the ground for a gladiolus, I felt my shoulders hunch, my back curve into my father. Lately, it happens often. scratching my head when I read. Walking paper in hand across the room to look through the window, surprising in myself his silences. I know, and so we meet finally, as entering my life, I discover his. I know now that we never spoke. I know, and cannot tell my daughter, who watches perhaps the curve of my back as I stare the flowers out of the earth. Thank you.
Thank you, Dick and Mary, for your sharing. I ran out of ink, so I have to read mine off of this newfangled electronic gadget. But we'll make do. What kind of lessons do fathers want to teach their children? What lessons are they driven to impart? Our relationships with our fathers are all different, but one constant is, I think, that these relationships can be complicated. My father wanted to teach my brother and me to be strong. He wanted to teach us how to survive and to face life and death with and pain with a certain amount of resignation and stoicism. At first, I wasn't going to speak today. I was planning on just being the coordinator for the service and let others do the heavy talking. But then I realized that would be a wasted opportunity. I never really talk about my dad. Maybe it was time that I did. But what to say? Where to begin? Why do my pages keep going by? I took a lesson from our Building Your Own Theology class, where we take the time to stop and think about how we really feel about a particular subject in order to clear our thoughts and decide what this really means to us. So I sat and thought about my dad to see what images would just pop into my mind first. What stands out, the most powerful images in my memory, at least from my earlier childhood, are of my father killing things. One time when I was pretty little, I was hanging around while my father was working in the backyard. I had probably been reading comics or watching cartoons, and my mom would say, "Go out and help your father." So I was watching him weed some plants, and he took a big green worm off of a plant. I remember thinking how beautiful its color was. I thought, in my naivete, that my father would put it somewhere, maybe in the trash, or relocate it away from his garden somewhere. Instead, he put it down and crushed it under his boot heel. For some reason, this image remains very strong in my memory. Another time, we had come back from fishing, and we had a live trout in a bucket of water. He put it on the garage floor and killed it by bashing it on the head with a hammer. Once we were out fishing in our boat on the bay, we wanted to bring home a shark to eat for dinner. That sounded pretty exciting at the time. We eventually brought one up, a 4-foot-long sand shark, a magnificent creature, and we held it while my dad stabbed it through the head with a knife. My brother and I were always much more liberal than my parents. My brother, in some ways, even more than me. I remember that Kurt would not stay to watch my dad kill that fish in the garage. But I wanted to be strong for my dad. I did not want to be seen as afraid, so I watched. Once, I was being punished for something, and my dad said he was going to take something of mine away from me. I don't remember what it was now, but I said, "You can't do that. It's mine." And he replied, "Until you're 18, you own nothing." This made me feel very small. My parents drank a lot of beer and ate a lot of steaks. Their favorite place to eat was called Sirloin and Brew in Oakland. They drank Olympia beer and smoked cool cigarettes. They did end up quitting smoking when I was around 10 or so. My dad was a typical office worker. My memories don't begin until the early 60s, but he looked like the classic 50s dad. He wore a suit and tie to the office, and his suits always smelled strongly of cigarettes. He always had lots to complain about when he got home. He disliked many of his coworkers, although a few he was close friends with. I think that the stress he went through at work made him feel weak. He hated his office job and was suffering from high blood pressure and stress. But like a good, hard-working dad, he stayed with it until my brother and I were old enough to fend for ourselves and move out. Then he retired, and my parents moved away to a small town up north and led a quiet life. He was very happy there until he passed away at age 68. We always said that if he hadn't moved away, he would have died much earlier. Anyway, not to talk about just the negative stuff, my dad did have a wicked sense of humor. He particularly enjoyed a really bad pun. Sometimes when my brother and I were getting ready for bed, my dad would come in and lay a really awful pun on us. He had probably been thinking about it all day and couldn't wait to try it out. I can't remember any of the specifics now, but they were real groaners. I seem to have inherited some of his sense of humor and also relish trying out bad jokes on my coworkers. We did a few other normal father-son activities. Sometimes we would toss the baseball or football back and forth, and our family would often go to Half Moon Bay Beach or Portola Park for outings and long hikes. But another impression that now comes to mind was that my father was terribly homophobic. He had hinted that he had a bad encounter with a gay person when he was a boy, but the details of this encounter were never spoken of. But he was always really uncomfortable with the subject, except when he had occasion to mock someone's lifestyle. Back in those days, one of our favorite shows was All in the Family. Everybody probably remembers that one. We laughed at the bigoted antics of Archie Bunker. I think my dad related to the character in many ways. My brother and I were more like Archie's liberal son-in-law, Michael, who Archie would constantly refer to as Meathead. In one episode, Michael was wearing what we might call now a man purse. And I apologize for this word, but I got to quote this in context. My dad was delighted in calling this kind of carry-all a fag bag. Now I know that that is a nasty, mean word, so I apologize for that. When I got the call that my dad had died, it was a shock. He seemed to be happy and healthy where he was, but he was killed by a massive heart attack. I cried a lot. My wife Margarita and I and Kurt and Rosanna made a long drive up to Alturas where we took care of business and drank a whole lot. My dad didn't want any kind of funeral. We scattered his ashes around their property, mostly in silence. But thanks to some of the things I had learned at this church, I was able to help, and I think bring some comfort to my family. As we threw the ashes around at each corner of the property, we stopped and I read a reading from our hymnal. The final one was, "For everything, a season. A time to be born, a time to die. A time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to kill, a time to heal." There is time for many things in our lives, and there is never enough time for other things. In remembering my dad, I recall the good and the bad, the love and the distance, the good jokes and the bad jokes, the good feelings and the not so good. If only we had more time, maybe we could have understood each other better. We never had one of those really deep, long conversations where it all comes out. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. Anyway, here's to fathers. They are usually dealing with their own demons and are doing the best that they can. Some are close, some are distant, but we all owe them for our lives and for the lessons they have taught us.